From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2019 when the late-night television host and producer James Corden had an idea. It was time, Corden decided, to bring Cinderella back to the big screen. The most popular versions of Cinderella were released in 1950 through Disney, of course, along with two live-action remakes. One was in 1997, starring Whitney Houston and Brandy. The other was in 2015, and that one made more than $500 million worldwide, according to Variety. Corden wanted pop star Camila Cabello to lead this version of Cinderella. He also wanted her to contribute some new music for the film. This would be an edgier Cinderella, stronger, more independent. The film has just been released, and the first reviews are mixed, I would say. Some not thrilled. Culture writer David Sims argues that while many older animated films are beset by racism, sexism, or other isms, it's not enough just to remake the movies with a 2021 mindset. Sims writes, quote, "Cinderella is the world's most famous underdog, but she's also more of a plot vehicle than a deep character. She embodies the moral principle that goodness, along with some fancy slippers and Prince Charming's hand in marriage, is its own reward. Can she ever actually be three-dimensional? The new film is a loud, brassy update that mixes in pop songs, self-referential jokes, and the thuddingly obvious message of empowerment. It is a mess," end quote. All of which leads to a number of questions about Hollywood and Disney and the desire to fix the sins of the past. Do we need a new Dumbo? Gone with the Wind? Song of the South? I mean, I did a little research in preparing for the show. I knew about racism and sexism in movies, but whoa, there is more. It's a lot. And our guests, I'm sure, have their own views on what deserves to be left in the past and what maybe should get a new look in 2021 or beyond. Amanda Chestnut is an artist and educator. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
And welcome to Chris Fanning, Director of Communications at Writers and Books. Hello, sir.
Hello. Thank you for having me in.
And welcome, Mrs. Kasia Davis. She is one of the great performers that we know. And it's nice to have you on the line, Mrs. Davis.
Well, hi there.
I knew we were going to get a song right out of the gate. Let me ask all three of you if you look at films like this and think it's about time or sort of indifferent or, boy, you didn't need to do that. Amanda Chestnut, what do you think?
I think with this film in particular, that's a tough call because I've seen so many iterations of this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are others, if we're especially talking about the Disney version, there are others in their library that could use a little dirt over them instead.
Full banishment.
Like, just bury them. Just bury them. And then some would make good zombies. Some could come back. But there are a few that could be buried. But Cinderella, I think, is a much older story and is a much more in the way that we retell Taming of the Shrew over and over again in so many different ways. I think that Cinderella is a little bit more dynamic and has a lot more potential.
Okay. Chris Fanning, what do you think?
It's kind of a loaded concept because we do have this cherished treasure chest of these stories that people grow up hearing. You know, you start off with fairy tales as a child, and usually through books, that is your first introduction to them. And then, you know, you discover you can sit through the movies as a child and actually take that in. As far as do they need to be redone or modernized, I feel like there's a lot of voices that we haven't heard from that deserve to have their chance in the spotlight before we say, well, we have to retell this story because it's the only way to get that message across.
Mrs. Kasia Davis, what do you think?
I say, why not? I mean, it's fun to see the different variations. I found myself watching I did not watch the film. I only watched the preview, and I thought, oh, that's fun. It's a different spin on it. And I did then say to myself, well, what if I Googled how many times Cinderella has been redone? Mm. And Google tells me 500. There are over 500. So, I mean, this is not an original concept to redo, you know, Cinderella. But I agree that some things, you know, I mean, they could be left. But why not, you know, create something different and new with a different spin?
Well, let's listen to a couple clips here, because to Miss Davis's point, I mean, this is not only a film that's been remade explicitly as Cinderella, but there's, as some of our listeners are already pointing out, apparently there was a Drew Barrymore movie.
Oh, we're going to talk about Ever After.
Oh, I love Ever After.
We're going to talk about Ever After.
See? Oh, look at all the things I'm learning here. So there's, like, you know, sort of direct remakes, and then there's sort of related movies. So there's been a lot. This is definitely a film that aims to say, we don't have to do Cinderella the way we used to in terms of creating a character who just wants, you know, the prince's hand in marriage and, you know, all of these things. So let's start with this clip here. In this clip, Cinderella meets her fairy godmother, Fab G. See, I can't see. It's Fab. In this clip, Cinderella meets her fairy godmother, who goes by Fab G. Instead of giving Cinderella a dress for the ball, she's getting a pantsuit. Let's listen.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am your fabulous godmother.
But why?
Baby, you saved me. And so now I'm here to save you by sending you to that ball.
Well, I'm not allowed at the ball. And quite frankly, I think you're a figment of my imagination.
Okay, let's not ruin this incredibly magical moment with reason. Do you want to go to that ball and meet a bunch of rich people who will change your life?
Yes, I was just crying and singing about it like 2 minutes ago.
Okay, so that would be an affirmative?
Yes.
I can't hear you?
Yes.
Like you mean it?
Yes!
Then go, you shall! When you wish upon a star, your dreams will take you very far. Oh, yeah. When you wish upon a dream, life ain't always what it seems. Shine and star come into view. Shine and watch the light on you. Body big and strong. You can't wear that to the ball.
I know. Oh, but look at that. This is different. I've never seen anything
okay,
like this.
Okay, Dad. You said you wanted to be a businesswoman.
Amanda Chestnut is the only one who's seen it start to finish here. Did you dig that scene?
I watched it this morning, and it was fun. It would the whole thing was fun. There were definitely like when Billy Porter starts singing "Shining Star," your face, Chris, was absolutely priceless, and. It is that level of fun, and some of that translates a little weirdly, like Idina Menzel singing Madonna in this kind of Broadway-ish
Material Girl
remake of Material Girl. Like it's there were moments when I couldn't tell if the movie wanted to be In the Heights or if it wanted to be Moulin Rouge, but it was fun, and I think it was aware of how silly it was.
That's, and I'm glad you say that, Amanda, because the part of the review that I read at the beginning that I really sort of recoiled at is this idea that fairy tales are meant to be three-dimensional characters. Fairy tales are not the most deep-thinking things here.
Fairy tales are meant to be morality stories. They're meant to be cautionary stories. They're meant to be a reflection of a cultural milieu, but they are not meant for deep characters. That's just not what a fairy tale is about.
Yeah, so I think this idea that, well, we need to give Cinderella some depth here. I like the idea of flipping on its head some of these ideas that now she's wearing a pantsuit to the ball. And in this clip that we're going to hear, let's hear her reject Robert. See, in this clip, Robert tells Cinderella he wants to marry her, but she rejects him.
Robert is the prince, yes.
The original motto of Cinderella was happily ever after, but in this film, the motto becomes, I choose me.
Sounds like you need to lower your price.
Sir, please don't pile on, okay?
You're the one. I pick you to be my princess. What's wrong? I assure you, it doesn't matter to me that you're not of royal birth.
No, that's not it.
We'll get married. Okay, we'll get married and you will live the rest of your life as royalty.
Royalty? What about my work? My dresses?
Well, that would most likely be frowned upon. Women have a very prescribed role in court. Role. But I would make sure that you were dressed by the finest dressmakers in all the land.
I'm a dressmaker.
I know, there's just no one else in this world I'd rather be with than you.
Robert, stop. I don't want a life stuck waving from a royal box any more than a life confined to a basement. I have dreams that I have to chase. So if it's a choice, I choose me.
I wonder, Chris Fanning, if Will and Kate were watching this. You know, I mean, the royal family... They haven't been very happy people lately.
That's true.
There's been a huge split in that family.
Have they ever been happy people?
Great point. Actually, the richest people I know are generally the least happy people I know. Just a thought there. Okay. What do you think? Are you interested now? Are you hooked? You want to see this?
I had not. It wasn't that I had not watched the movie because I refused to see it. I just have not gotten around to it, unfortunately.
You're not like a Drew Barrymore loyalist.
If they were coming out with the Ever After, celebration anniversary, I'd be watching that. I wouldn't be here because I'd still be home watching it again. I think it's interesting. Again, we are talking about bringing these things into 2021, right? We want people to be able to see themselves on screen and see versions of heroes that they want to aspire to, not just... Well, that made me feel good at the end because the prince and the princess lived happily ever after. You know, there has to be more to it. And I think we as consumers of entertainment want more. We want to have a little bit more of a complex or in-depth story told to us and not just this kind of fluff feel-good time.
Yeah, and so, Ms. Kasha Davis, there's two things that kind of pop to mind now. You know, Chris brings up wanting to be able to see ourselves on screen. Never been a problem for... cis white guys like me. I mean, I've seen plenty of me. How important do you think representation is, first of all, Mr. Kasha Davis?
Oh, my gosh. It's extremely important now, more than ever. And it's exciting to have a fabulous godmother. And Billy Porter was a great choice. I mean, just the constant red carpet fabulosity that they continue to bring is just, a great example of, you can be you. And I just imagine, I always wanted to be the fairy godmother, bibbidi bobbidi boo, but most young kids don't want to be that original character because she was dowdy and matronly. But this gives an opportunity for, anyone to be, to look at that character and think how fabulous. And they poke fun throughout that scene. And then certainly, I thought it was great that Cinderella says, I don't want to be up waving in that box. I want to make my own clothes. And I'm, and then you never know. It makes you wonder like, oh, maybe they'll get together after she becomes, this fabulous fashion designer. I don't know. It makes me want to see it. And it's certainly, it's fun. And honestly, thinking, we mentioned about Material Girl. I mean, does Madonna do Material Girl the same way anymore? No, she does it every other way. If you ever go to a Madonna concert, she never sings her music the way, or if you watch it on YouTube or whatever, she never sings any of her music the way she originally did anyway. So another version of Material Girl is no surprise to me.
Well, this is where I feel the push-pull in myself because I think it's not meant to be subtle, and that's okay, but boy, you cannot be less subtle than Idina Menzel singing Material Girl.
No,
not
subtle. Right? It was not subtle.
And the film has apparently has quite a lot of that. Didn't seem to bother you though, Amanda.
No, but I, again, from Moulin Rouge to A Knight's Tale, have no qualms about mixing modern music in with more traditional fairy tales.
Is there a desire? This is what I'm very... I want to hear from all three of you about what I perceive as something that I think is kind of corrosive. Is there a desire to always hate on something? It does social media create this momentum of let's find something we don't like and just hate on it? Because to me, maybe a film like this is sort of falls flat. Maybe it's great. But the intentions are obviously good. The intentions, I mean, it is trying maybe to right some what it perceives to be historical wrongs with the original presentation of the material. But clearly, whether you like it or not, they're trying to do a good thing and send positive messages to people. And yet, I feel like everybody's always got to find something to hate on just about everything. Am I wrong, Amanda Chestnut?
I wanted to dislike this movie.
When you said you liked it, my jaw dropped in the parking lot.
Why did you want
I wanted to dislike it? Because I'm actually a really big fan of the Rodgers and Hammerstein, like Julie Andrews. I'm not Drew Barrymore. I am Julie Andrews Cinderella fan.
So Chris is wrong. He's always wrong.
19
Nice to meet you.
50s. Yes. Julie Andrews Cinderella is my favorite. And when I saw the Broadway production, even though I knew what the costume change was like with the fairy godmother and I knew how it worked, it still made me cry to see it on stage. I am a big Cinderella fan. I have been since I was very little. And I still liked this movie. I still did.
The high bar cleared your bar.
It was still really fun, and it was the watching it was even surprising in that the cast was even more diverse, I think, than the Brandy version was. There were tons of black and brown people everywhere in this village. This was not a even though almost everyone had a British accent. It was not like here's another white movie full of white people. It was like normal to just have black and brown people walking around. And it wasn't like, here's a magical black person, even though Billy Porter was very much a magical black person. It was above and beyond in that fairy godmother sense.
Can I ask you just to elaborate a little bit on people who may not have picked up on the point you're just making about the magical black person historically in films?
So especially in American movies, we wind up seeing that black folk fall into several tropes. And one of them is that of the magical black person, the magical Negro. And it is a trope that makes a black person safe because of how special they are, and they use that special power to serve the white characters. And that was not at all what I was seeing happen in this film. This was a fairy godmother who was a fabulous godmother because that was the most fabulous person. That was the choice. That was the fabulous person to be that person. And that wasn't at all. And there was an awareness of the sense of magic and the use of magic. He cracks a joke about glass slippers being uncomfortable and magic only going so far. But there was definitely an awareness of the magic, but it wasn't in a kind of servitude. It was in that more traditional fairy tale, salvaging the small creature and then having the small creature become the magical thing.
Mm. I think there is something different, by the way, between someone like you who clearly loves Cinderella all the way back to the 1950s versions of it and saying, you know what, I really didn't want to like this because, you know, you might be a traditionalist in certain ways with certain films. There's a difference between that and the way social media can sort of escalate hate fests on certain things that I think can get out of hand.
Totally.
Kasia Davis, do you see that?
I do. And I'm so glad that you brought that up because it is, you know, positive and negative energy out there. We think can be equal, but unfortunately, the negativity is what people respond to. So, you know, it becomes more popular and there are more likes and there are more comments when people, quote unquote, hate on something. And as you mentioned, you know, the intention was the positivity. The intention was for it to be fun. We're not trying to make a very huge, dramatic a statement with this film, I'm assuming. So that being said, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where we're learning how to use all of the social media tools that we have at our fingertips. But it is very obvious to me because much of my life is spent posting and, you know, saying I'm still here on social media. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if I look at what I will post, for instance, I can post something about this is my new project or this is what I'm doing, and it'll get so many likes. But then if I post, I don't like that this person said this XYZ and comment on it, it'll get thousands of likes and then be utilized on other gossip YouTube programs. So unfortunately, that is where we're at. And so the positive gurus like ourselves just have to keep on keeping on.
Or figure out a way to convince ourselves to really quit social media, which is, you know.
Next.
Are you wise enough for that, Chris Fanning?
I think you've fallen in out of love with each of the platforms you're on, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're scrolling through Twitter every day because you love it. Some days you're like, I just want to look at pictures. Just get me to Instagram where it's safe. but and that's relative as well. But I think, you know, in a case like this, when a movie comes out, if it's not your cup of tea, don't watch it. Don't have an opinion on it. You don't have an opinion because you haven't seen what was created. So you shouldn't speak to it. Do people ever follow that rule? Absolutely not.
Nope.
But then there's those of us who, you know, I feel like we're like the positivity like team now. I'm like, we're the good ones. we don't ever do that. But, you know, just have fun. Enjoy it. Things mean things differently to each person, right? So Amanda's viewing of it, I could go home and watch this tonight and be like, all right, like it was silly. I didn't hate it, but it didn't wow me.
No, you need to go home and watch it and tell me if I'm bananas.
I'm calling in for the second half of the day at work. I'm like, I gotta watch all the Cinderellas.
All of them.
All of them. 500. Isn't it exhausting to think that everything I should see on social media, it's my job and my responsibility to comment on. You know, remember the days, I'm aging myself, but remember the days when I went to a record store, and I hope I don't need to explain what a record is on this particular program, but you flip through, and if you don't like a certain band, you just keep flipping, you know, you just keep going. Or if you don't like a certain song, you change the channel. You know, nowadays we have to have, you know, people really go off on it. And I think to myself, do you realize that that time you spent hating on something, disliking something, is energy you're keeping within yourself as well?
Well,
it's palpable.
I don't know, Ms. Davis. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start living in real life the way I do on social media. So if I'm driving in a car and I don't like a song on 97.9, I'm going to roll down my window and signal to the car next to me, like, roll your window down. This song sucks. I just want you to know that.
Right.
I need to have an opinion, and I need somebody to hear it. So you just heard it. You got it. And they're going to look at me like I am the weirdest person who's ever lived, and they're just going to drive off.
I'm going to say, sir, this is a Wendy's.
Can you imagine if we lived like that? I don't like myself on social media. I don't like myself when I'm driving either, by the way.
Evan, we got to work on that.
No. Nobody is a nice person when they're driving a car. Driving makes us all our worst versions of ourselves. And I think Twitter
exactly.
is like the other form of that. I mean, you know, unless you're Chris Fanning, who apparently...
No. Chris Fanning does some ridiculous things on Twitter. It's okay.
Thank you. It's true.
All right, see? Look, this is exactly why we invited this panel. The train is off the tracks, and it's going in an even way better direction than I thought we would go in, which is why they're here. Let's take our only break of the hour, and when we come back here, one of the things that I subjected myself to preparing for this program was really asking, what is the worst of the worst in terms of Disney and Hollywood? And when do you decide, as Amanda Chestnut said earlier, just to leave dirt on something and never dig it back up and bring it back? Because there is no shortage of stuff out there that is staggeringly racist, sexist, homophobic. I mean, just the stuff is off the charts. But then can you redeem it in any way? Should you even try? We'll talk about that next here. And we'll do that on the other side of this break with Amanda Chestnut, Chris Fanning, Mrs. Kasha Davis. And we'll take some of your feedback as well after this break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections. How did Gino Finelli from City Magazine end up buying a shirt but getting a bag of marijuana? Some of the ways that stores are dealing with the law. We'll talk about that fascinating story from City. And then in our second hour, Assemblyman Damon Meeks proposes 5 hours of education if you want to buy a gun. We'll talk about it.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Valerie wants to write and validate Ever After with Drew Barrymore. For a feminist Cinderella, Valerie says, way too overlooked. All right, Chris Fanning, you've waited years. Now you've got the microphone. You've got the microphone now. Why do people need to see Drew Barrymore in, what's it called, Ever After?
Ever After. Valerie, when are we getting together to watch it? Let's get it on the big screen.
What is so good about this movie?
You know, I don't even know the year it came out, 1990-something, but it was the first retelling probably that I had seen since the Disney version, the Julie Andrews version, that, you know, had Drew Barrymore in it, who was like this American sweetheart at the time of this movie coming out. And Angelica Houston is the evil stepmother, and she just nails it flawlessly in that role. I mean, it's super quotable. It's fun. It's beautiful to watch. And it was a little more, well, it's less magical. It's more realistic. So there's a lot of beautiful stuff about it.
Sherry writes to say, Ever After is my all-time favorite movie. Period. I've watched...
oh, my God.
It's a celebration of Chris Fanning in the studio. Sherry says, I've watched it dozens of times, especially when I need to feel a sense of empowerment.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think, as I said before, we all absorb and digest entertainment differently. And if that's what that movie is saying to that person, then that's great. That's not wrong. And how I interpret it, that's not wrong
either.
I
don't know. Are you ready for this? The hammer of truth is coming.
Here it comes.
Have you seen Ever After?
Yes, I've seen Ever After.
Why is it garbage?
It's what?
Oh, I thought you were going to hammer Chris for this. No.
No, I
love thought we were going to fight over this. Okay.
No. She loves Cinderella. It's in her wheelhouse.
Yeah, no, it is, and it's a good telling of the Cinderella story, and I like it. It is. It's beautiful to watch. It's not militantly feminist, but it is progressive, and it's very well acted. It's another fun trip.
Okay. Mrs. Davis, have you seen that one?
Probably. Our daughter made us watch so many. They made us watch so many different things. One of them was, I think it was the Princess Diaries with Julie Andrews and those types of things. So I probably watched it with Chardonnay in a coffee mug, and I was walking around saying, oh, that's good, that's good. That was a different time.
You have a vague remembrance. This is a vague, yeah, exactly. Chardonnay haze remembrance of it.
Yes.
Okay. So this is just one of the many films that Hollywood has decided that they're going to bring back. And often it's animated movies because, for all the obvious reasons that all three of our guests have been telling you, there is some magic, there's nostalgia, people remember them. But if you really go back and spend time with them, I mean, this has now been well-documented. The Disney catalog is shocking, except not to you, Amanda. It's shocking to me, you know? Amanda wants to correct you. This is not shocking. This is par for the course. How about this? It's shocking but not surprising. But it should still shock when we see the Jim Crow scene in Dumbo, for example, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, should still shock, shouldn't it?
It should feel more uncomfortable now than it did. If it doesn't, that might be something worth some introspection.
Somebody will email me and, you know, give me the well actually, I think, because that usually happens here. How about Fantasia, the pastoral symphony scene, which I can't even describe? I mean, but Fantasia, you know, when I was growing up, that was being reboxed in all these classic sets and the magic of Fantasia, and there were TV specials. But the racism in that is so strong. And I'm wondering, so let's start with a film like that, Amanda Chestnut. Should that film get any relook? Can you edit out those scenes and then just try to represent the material as some have done? Or do you remake it? What do you do with something like that?
I think that there is, for some of these, some space for remaking. There would need to be a recognition of the fact that everyone from the top down we're talking from executives to animators to voice actors, are all very different people with a very different awareness, different communities than what had happened in the studios in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, let's be real, with the ability to create more space for more diverse creative people. I think that there is also space to rework those stories because, again, many of them are built on much older stories with a classic understanding and storyline that can be refamiliarized to contemporary cultural milieus, as fairy tales are meant to do.
Is Dumbo an example?
Okay, Dumbo wasn't that good to start with.
That's the
number
thing.
One.
Yes.
Number one. I am over the dead mother Disney story.
Ugh, yeah.
There were some very fun songs, but when we're looking at something like Dumbo, even circuses don't exist the way that they did when Dumbo was created. So could you remake Dumbo? Yes, but I think that there would have to be a massive overhaul for an understanding. When was the last time you have a younger kid? When's the last time you saw an animal in the circus?
Oof.
Right? So how do you tell that story now? And I'm sure that there could be a creative way to do it, but if you're going to remake it, don't just remove the racism or the sexism or the homophobia, because there are so many ways that you can retell that story for a modern audience.
Let me ask Chris and Kosh Davis about this notion of what's worth sort of reviving. How do you feel about this debate, Chris Fanning, about whether it's the Fantasias, the Dumbos of the world, the Disney classics? Well, what do you bury and leave behind?
Well, no one has reached out to me with a survey asking which ones I want.
No, there's social media. You're going to... I asked you on this program. This is not Twitter. This is not an Arby's. This is not a Wendy's.
What I'm saying is no one, you know, I just want to know where the market research is of the person saying, like, it's time to bring Dumbo back. You know, it's time for us to...
They can revive anything and try to make money off it.
Absolutely. And they do. And they actually did remake Dumbo a couple of years ago. I know Danny DeVito was in it, and that's the only clear memory I have of the trailer.
They did Aladdin with Will Smith.
Yeah,
last
didn't
year.
See
that,
it.
That I heard bad things about.
That Cinderella though.
The new Cinderella.
Yeah.
See, I didn't watch that one yet. Is it that good?
Oh, stunning.
Okay.
All right. Kasha, have you seen that one?
Okay. How about Aladdin? So you did not watch
it.
The Will Smith version?
No.
Mr. Kasha Davis, did you see the Will Smith Aladdin?
No, but I saw the 2019 Dumbo, and it was cute.
It was cute. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was cute.
There was no way there was a Jim Crow in there.
No. And so the reality is, thank goodness we have to make changes and learn from our past cinema or animation or comedy, right? Thank goodness that we're not still doing those things. So I think that it's necessary in any aspect of a revival where you have to take a look and be like, ooh, that's no longer okay. I mean, there are some, you know, I love my old school divas. There's some Judy Garland songs that I'm like, okay, can't sing that song anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, and so thank goodness that we are realizing that that is something that we don't want to continue to, you know, perpetuate or emulate or put out on stage or on cinema. So I think, you know, that just shows, thank goodness, again, progress. I have to giggle because my neighbor, who's a great friend and therapist, at one point posted something on Facebook about Disney characters and if they went to a therapist. And it was one of these, you know, funny things that gets posted on Facebook and, you know, Ariel. So the therapist says, so basically you changed your whole self just to fit into his world. You know, if you go through these, they're kind of just shocking. You know, the therapist says to Snow White, you went to live with seven people you didn't know and you were poisoned by food by a stranger who offered it to you. I'm just simply impressed by your capacity of trusting people. You know, they're fantastic. Belle, it doesn't matter how many books he gave you, he's still your captor. You know?
Right. Don't make me laugh Cinderella's, at this.
I know. Well, Cinderella, okay, you dance for a couple of hours in at a party, and now you think he's the love of your life? Tell me more about that. You know, so you know, it is kind of funny, and but at the same time, we need to change some of that messaging. And if it's campy and fun, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate that point. Campy and fun sometimes is a way to be a fun vehicle. But the scene that we played earlier, where Cinderella says, "You know, I don't want this life with you," where I can't do the work that I want to do, and I have to wear what you tell me to wear. And we stand at a balcony and wave to people. That's important. And people are hearing that from the real life current royal family. Amanda Chestnut's right. They've probably always had unhappiness and strife and scandal, and they exist for the tabloids. But those are, I think, important messages to people. What do we aspire to? Why do we think we want that? Why do you grow up thinking that, well, if I had all this money, I could buy the biggest house you've ever seen? And I don't know. Maybe the older I get, the more I just think that is not enjoyable. Who's going to clean that? Like, I mean, that's a lot of work to begin with. And then there's the happiness quotient. So I know a couple of people have been doing research on happiness, and odd as it is, there are literally annual income amounts at which you stop statistically being likely to become more happy. So if people think, well, if I only made X amount of money, there's diminishing returns. Now, money certainly makes life more simple, and everybody needs resources to live, and that's one of the big issues here when you've got this concentration of wealth at the top of the society. But most of those people are really miserable. They're poor, they don't treat people very nice, and they're not very happy themselves. So it's a fascinating thing here. But you got Disney kind of spending decades telling people, especially young girls, mm-hmm. but if you just find a wealthy guy, mm-hmm. then you can have it all. You don't want that castle. I don't want that castle. Another thing that I noticed looking back through a lot of this stuff, and I'm sure Kasha Davis is no surprise to you, the homophobia in just popular media in general is staggering how long and how pervasive that's been there. And frankly, that's been hard to even get rid of. The notion of, just sort of boys being made fun of for being feminine, or, I mean, the storylines are myriad there. Do you remember growing up and struggling at all with that? Or you know, I wonder how you view that in, today, especially thinking about kids seeing some messages like that.
Well, you know, I often say, as a little boy, girl, gal, girl, boy, fella, growing up in the 70s and 80s, Elton John, Liberace, and Barry Manilow, they were all straight, every one of them, you know. And if there were somebody on television who happened to be perceived as gay, they were a joke or a tragedy. And it was lighten the loafers. And, oh, mm-hmm. you're so funny, you know. Thank goodness I'm a part of a new wave of individuals that are on social media and television with RuPaul's Drag Race and other forms of where we kind of start to show happy, healthy individuals. A shameless plug is that Mr. Davis and I are working on our pilot for a first television show of a married couple, an actual married couple. One happens to be a drag queen, and we're a gay couple for children, for children's television. So to me, I think it's wildly important, not only for the kids who identify a certain way, but for the parents and the kids who are maybe a little sheltered and don't see people who are different. And when they see someone who's different, they can treat them with kindness. You know, I think any opportunity to show the positivity of someone who is different is very welcomed.
I have to say, Mr. Davis, and I want to be careful here because I don't want to paint too broadly, but some of the folks in this country who might say, well, you're wringing your hands too much about old Disney or certain scenes that you thought were problematic, they're often the same folks who are really worried about drag queen story hours. Which, by the way, drag queen story hours are awesome. It's so great. And I don't know if you're doing it anymore. This is not meant to be sort of a shameless plug and promotion if you're doing anything. But I see some overlap. This idea that, well, you're attacking tradition. You know, what's wrong with Gone with the Wind? What's wrong with all these old Disney films? And yet they're very, very concerned about, did Irondequoit Library have a drag queen story hour? Do you see that, Mrs. Davis?
Well, it's interesting because I'm the one who did the drag queen story hour at Irondequoit that got the negative press. That was one that we did years ago. And then we've done several it's free, so it's not sold out. Several with several hundred kids and parents at Blackfriars Theater for years. So the one that's remembered is the one time I did one at the Irondequoit Public Library where it got some negative press, where they said the idea of you're pushing an agenda. And I'll never forget what Danny Hoskins said to me. He coached me in case I should get approached by anyone in the media. And he said, absolutely, tell them that we are pushing an agenda, and that agenda is kindness. If you see someone different in this world, treat them with kindness, you know. And I was interviewed once about story time, and they said, well, why aren't you explaining to the kids why you're dressed up in drag? And the answer is simple. They never ask the question.
They're not curious about that. They might want to know where you got your costume from, but they're not going to ask you why you're wearing a costume. It's dress up to them. And play is a regular part of childhood still, surprisingly.
Kids are so much more. I mean, like, they're so corruptible, sadly, because they grow into adults who have very interesting views. But no, I mean, Amanda's point's a powerful one. Kids can be so loving and such good examples, I think. And yet we get, and I understand what Mrs. Davis is saying about the Irondequoit show and people were upset, but there is a whole media ecosystem that has Drag Queen Story Hour right up there with, you know, some other sort of cultural shibboleths that are meant to be frightening. Chris Fanny, what do you make of all this, especially when you go back and you see how much homophobia has been in film, both live action and animated films, that these are often films that are sort of held up and celebrated?
Yeah, it is a tough one because, again, what if I'm watching it and I'm not seeing it that way, or I'm missing that message completely? You know, we have people who are constantly blinded to racism that they're seeing in front of them, homophobia. And then it takes those people who are pointing it out and either saying, you know, this needs to go. And we all kind of have our eyes open and the wool taken off our eyes to see them. And then it's time for, I think Kasha was saying this earlier, it's time for the discussion. It's time to, you know, take a look at these things and reckon what they are and where they came from. And then start the conversation moving forward to a place that's more kind.
And for me, I don't even want to say that this is time for this thing to go, whatever it is. What I can say is this is a thing that I find to be hurtful. Mm-hmm. And this is how it is hurtful for me. And if I can then have that conversation from a place of empathy, then I can leave it on whoever else is watching to decide if that is something that they want to continue to have in their lives. Because I'm perfectly okay with never watching Gone with the Wind. I don't need that in my life. I know that story. I know the quotes. I know the whole thing, unfortunately, and way more than I should for somebody who's never watched it. But does that mean I need to watch it, even though AMC now has a little clip beforehand where they talk about the cultural relevancy? And I don't need that. I don't need to watch it. And these are the reasons why it hurts me. I literally had a therapist say I should watch Gone with the Wind so I could learn more about mammy figures
and get a better understanding of what it's like to be overbearing with caregiving. I'm seeing shocked faces in the studio.
This is a former therapist.
Former.
This cannot be your current therapist.
No. But, you know, I don't need to watch that movie. I know what damage it has done for me personally. And I can tell people that, and then they can decide, you know, I like Amanda. She's all right. This is something that hurts her. I don't want it in my life anymore.
But that's different than sort of censorship. That is a decision that people are making individual by individual because they're listening, they're open, they're caring, right?
I absolutely do not believe that any of these things should be censored. They can be awful and you can watch them. But I think that people should be made aware of how that impacts others around them.
Yeah, I think about the committee that did a lot of work to bring the racist panel at the carousel, at the dental carousel up at Ontario Beach Park down. But their view was that it probably belongs in a museum with a lot of information to help people understand. And I thought that was splitting the difference really, really well because, you know, again, the defenders of leaving it up there on the carousel was like, well, you know, you can't whitewash our history. You can't pretend we never. But they weren't saying that. They were saying this still hurts people because it's still up without context here. Mm-hmm. And it's racist and terrible and awful. But it is still very much a part of who we are and were. And we need to learn from that and understand that without pretending it didn't happen. So it's films is a little tougher because it's like, well, do you edit out? We even talk about Dumbo. Do you edit out the Jim Crow scene? Do you edit out certain scenes? Do you not, but then only, I mean, I don't know where they show, or do you not ever remake them? That's tougher to me. Amanda, you seem to be saying, let people decide on their own.
I might have too much faith in how empathetic and educated people choose to be. But I do know that people can learn and people can change and that people do have empathy and that as much as we thrive on that social media, poke fingers, hate culture, there's also a lot to be said for enjoying things from a place of joy. And I hope that as we think about remaking these things, we can approach them in a way that would bring joy to more people.
Chris Fanning, what do you think about the conversation about whether the word is censorship or banning certain films, et cetera? I mean, that can be tough calls.
Yeah, I think it is. It's a very powerful call, too, right? I mean, we talk about cancel culture all the time, and people, you say that word, and people are on either side of that, if that's, you know, something we need to talk about or should exist.
It's either not a thing or it's the biggest threat to the country.
Or it's a super thing, yeah. You know, just when Amanda was talking now about, you know, revisiting and is it a time to revisit, I just, a couple weeks ago, for whatever reason, put on Peter Pan, the old Disney Peter Pan.
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Wow.
Oh, did you see Tiger Lily with fresh eyes?
Oh, the whole thing, I said, I was watching it with a friend of mine, and at the end I said, I don't think I ever need to watch this again. Mm. You know, and Disney now has that thing that they put at the beginning, mm-hmm. right, that says, you know, some of this stuff is culturally inappropriate. And I don't remember what the exact wording is, but, and I thought, oh, yes, you know, I know that there's the red-faced man, you know, and these horrible...
Yeah, how strange that our kids grow up with awful views of Indigenous peoples.
Right, but you know what? I hadn't thought about that
right.
until rewatching it as an adult, and I just thought, you know, this is... Again, this is not something I'm going to revisit.
Yeah.
It's not worth coming back to.
And it doesn't need to be banned.
No.
You haven't canceled it. You have just made a decision that is not something that you need in your life.
Correct. I'll watch Ever After instead.
But I just got another email. Sean Marie Jones, the title of the email is Ever After is in all caps.
Oh,
the
man.
Best.
We need to find each other, everyone. Let's start that Facebook page.
Mrs. Kasha Davis, where do you draw the lines on, you know, saying, hey, if you don't like the film, don't watch the film versus nobody should be showing this and we should try to find a way to make sure no one can see it?
I guess it depends on the audience. And I say that with some of these children's films, they may need to be remade because oftentimes with kids, I think in some ways we're trying to teach you a little bit something behind a messaging, you know, some messaging in a children's book or in children's shows. But, you know, I don't think we should ban other things like Gone with the Wind or other films. I think it should make us feel very uncomfortable, and we should watch it and know that this is how it was and this is how we don't want to be anymore. But I guess with my thought is that with certain educational style children's programming, that maybe certain things just might need to be either remade or fall off.
Well, I appreciate the conversation this hour, and I guess if we're taking anything, it's that we all have to go see Ever After.
I guess.
Who knew that Connections listeners were the biggest fan base for Ever After?
this makes a lot of sense, actually.
It's all coming together now. Mrs. Kasha Davis, are you performing somewhere anytime soon?
Well, currently I'm in my drag room right now, so I feel like I'm performing. What I've been doing is drag brunch at Edibles would probably be the next thing. Yes.
Oh,
we
I
do,
hear wonderful
our
things.
Performances there.
Yeah, I hear wonderful things.
We have
things.
A lot of fun there.
I was going to say, I hear wonderful things about the food. Are you kidding?
Thanks
I hear wonderful things about the performance. Are you kidding? Mrs. Kasha Davis, thank you for being with us. Wonderful getting your perspective. Thanks for making it work for the show today.
Thank you.
Chris Fanning, Director of Communications at Writers and Books, where the books have not been banned. They are thoughtfully curated and chosen. And we always love working with you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. This has been a real great conversation.
By the way, what book was Ever After? Is there a book version?
Not that I know of.
Oh, there should be.
All right. We'll get the team together.
Yeah,
we'll
are you get back kidding? To you. Ever After a month on Connections. Amanda Chestnut, artist and educator, always great. Thank you for being here.
So glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Megan Mack, producer. Emma Ray Stein, production assistant. Rob Braden, the engineer. Barsook Records and Rah Rah Riot for the music. And Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening. We're back with you Wednesday on member-supported public radio. Ever After.